Welcome to the Final Draft Podcast. My name's Andrew Popel, and today I'm joined on the show by Donna M. Cameron. The Final Draft Podcast explores books, writing, and literary culture. Every week, Final Draft broadcasts from the studios of 2SER in Sydney and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. And at Final Draft, we are dedicated to exploring Australian writing, from debut authors to the classics, the books you know and love. These conversations look at the issues that drive storytelling, help us discover more from the books that we love, because these are the stories that make us who we are. 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people. I'm recording on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people. Wherever you are listening to this across Australia, you are on Aboriginal land. And I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of those lands, pay my respects to their ongoing connection to their lands, that these are unceded lands and treaty has never been made with Australia's First Nations. I'm joined on the show today by Donna M. Cameron, whose new book, The Rewilding, is something of an environmental road trip. It goes into the world of big business and then takes us to the bush as we have a look at what we're doing to the environment and some of the eco-warriors who are trying to take action. It's an absolute wild ride, and I can't wait to share this conversation. So join me today as Donna M. Cameron comes on to discuss The Rewilding. My name's Andrew Popel. It's my pleasure to be welcoming to the show Donna M. Cameron. Donna is a novelist and an award-winning playwright and short film writer. We are going to be discussing her new novel. It is called The Rewilding. Donna, great to have you here.
Thank you for the invite, Andrew. Nice to be here.
This is a stunning novel. So much happening. Let's meet Jagger. Jagger Eckerman is the office joke. As the son of the billionaire boss, everyone knows he's a Nepo baby with no real role in the company. But even Nepo babies can tantrum, and that's what happens when Jagger realizes he's being used as the fall guy for the company's dodgy dealings. Blowing the whistle was easy, but Jagger wasn't prepared for what comes next. Now he's stuck in a cave, hiding out, firmly in the sights of a climate activist who was already calling that cave home. Jagger's
you should have written our blurb. That was brilliant.
Jagger's kind of the key here, and when we meet him, he's at a pretty low ebb. His life feels like a lie, and as we see him through our climate activist Nia's eyes, hiding out in the cave, he kind of looks like a suit slumming it in the bush. This isn't the whole picture, though, and since Sympathy for Jagger, and I'm just going to nod to you here, Donna, and say I'm hearing his namesake song Sympathy for the Devil in that little sentence there, like, since that our sympathy for Jagger is really key to the novel, I'm curious, where did he start for you? Which version of Jagger first emerged from your pen?
Well, very interesting, because The Rewilding just arrived in a big whoosh for me. Jagger arrived, his name arrived, his mum arrived with his name, and I don't know where he came from. I did have a bit of a panic about him a few drafts in, because at the height of Me Too, like hashtag Me Too and Black Lives Matter, I realised my protagonist was, you know, the most hated species on the face of the earth, a privileged white male. and I did have a moment of like, oh, maybe I should change his sex, or I panicked really, and I went for a bushwalk, and I walked into a part of the national park where I don't usually go, and I looked up, and there above me was the word Jagger written on a rock. And I just went, oh, it's okay. It's going to be all right. I saw that as a sign. But, I don't really know where he came from.
I'm really
sorry. That's a really annoying answer.
Not at all. I think at the heart of what I was asking was also this sense that Jagger contains layers, and I love that you realized at the heart of, you know, incredible social movements like Me Too that you were writing the enemy, but there is this slow unfolding of his character, and where he may seem to be one thing, perhaps we come to understand that there is more. Nia and Jagger, that dynamic is incredible, and they seem to exist at extremes. Jagger is none too kind in his early assessment of Nia's dreadlock dreadlocked appearance. And Nia's this eco warrior. She looks really dangerous to Jagger's suburban sensibilities. We really only get to know Nia through these brief interludes of letters or journal entries. Tell me a little bit about that structure, and was Jagger chosen as your point of view character because he does skew a little closer to perhaps a typical reader's views?
The original title was The Rewilding of Jagger Ekerman, and I chose Ekerman because it was like every man, and yeah, I just wanted, I suppose, yeah, to write from that perspective rather than, yeah, I suppose every man is, you know, he was a bit more normal than Nia, who's quite on the fringes and radicalized. So, I suppose that if that answers your question, there was a lot more of Nia in the book originally, but I found she became stronger the more I got rid of her. So, it was stronger to have her a bit more mysterious for Jagger as well and the reader at first. But, you know, she's just as nasty with her. She calls him the suit. Like, they both judge each other on appearances at first. They're equally as judgmental in their own way.
You've already answered one of my questions, so now I'm going to ask it and try and tease out a little bit more information, because I was really interested in this title, The Rewilding. And, you know, the concept of rewilding is this return to nature by allowing natural processes to express themselves. And I really wonder, you've just told me that, you know, the original title had The Rewilding of Jagger Ekerman, but was it only Jagger that you saw as needing to kind of get back in touch with these natural processes? Maybe not just in the natural world, but with themselves and how they live?
Yeah, well, I mean, the title works on many levels, but Nia's kind of already there in a way. She's tuned in. She's very tuned into what's happening with the planet. She's very aware of the wind. The wind has changed, and she can feel that. And so Jagger is aware of man-made climate change and the effects of what's happening, but, he just knows it as a series of facts, and it hasn't hit him in the heart like it has Nia. And I think it hits us all at different points and times, and it's going to hit everyone at some point. And maybe my book will do that to certain people. I don't know. But when it does hit you, it's quite devastating. We're going through that journey with Jagger, I suppose, where it hits him that what's actually happening right now with the planet.
Jagger's a bit of an accidental activist in that his rebellion against his father's company, you know, it happens in a fit of, I guess, dissatisfaction rather than trying to strike a blow for the world. Nia, as you say, is very much in tune, and she is trying to affect real change, but the way she's tuned in has kind of induced this. She's suffering from a kind of eco despair. Despite her commitment to action, she worries that nothing can be done, or that, you know, anything that we are doing is ultimately fruitless. And I wondered about this sense that she maybe needs to rewild herself. She needs to get back in touch with something else. I wondered how you felt about that attitude of eco despair, as I'm calling it, that we see in Nia.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've hit the nail on the head, Andrew. That's definitely for her as well. She needs to remember that the planet is a living, breathing thing, and that we're all part of it. And then when humans change their actions, the planet actually responds very quickly. And that's what gives me incredible hope. Nia came very much from a place of my own climate grief and despair. So I wrote this book for myself because I needed to find hope. It definitely came out of a need to find out if there was hope. I had lost I'd lost hope. Yeah. I just thought, wow, this is the end. Like, what? There's nothing we can do. And through the writing of the book, I found so much to be hopeful for. So, yeah, it was really weird how both characters kind of swapped positions a bit as the book went on. And it was almost like, I think, you know, I look back now, it's like I had the two different sides of myself, because naturally I'm a very optimistic person. So when the reality of what was happening with the planet hit me, it was the first time in my life where I felt this depression. And I was always fighting with myself, saying, no, you know, humans, we're incredible. We can turn this around. And another part of me was like, no, we're idiots and we're all going to die. So I fought it out. I trapped myself, both sides of myself, in a cave and then a car, and I fought it out.
Well, my next segue, you've kind of nicely anticipated we're going to take a hard left turn here, pun intended, because the rewilding does become something of a road trip story, which is incredible in its presentation. Road trips, we love going on road trips. Road trips present enormous narrative potential. How did you want those themes of journey and destination to work for you in the novel?
Well, I wanted to get a sense of what is happening right now. And so that is why it is such a, you know, there's an energy behind it that doesn't stop. It's like they're being pushed forward, whether they like it or not. So I wanted to capture that feeling of what's happening with climate change. I mean, we look out the window, and I mean, not today because it's pouring rain, but you know, you can look out the window and it's beautiful blue sky and the birds are singing, but we're actually in code red, you know. We're in a crisis. And I think subconsciously as a species, we are feeling that. So I wanted to capture that forward movement that is just, yeah, whether they like it or not, they've got to keep moving.
The book is also so much a sense of place. I think understanding our own environment is also about place. Understanding what is happening to the environment also requires an understanding of place. Does the road trip also then, was it an excuse to feature some incredible locations and environments along our eastern seaboard?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely a love song to nature as well, this book. I can't help that in my writing. I love nature. It feeds my soul. So it definitely, yeah, I took them to some nice landscapes. But, you know, there's also some not so nice landscapes. And it was a fine line writing this book. It was like walking a tightrope. On one hand, I maintain the gaze on what's happening. But on the other hand, I tried to fill myself, and I suppose the reader, with a sense of we can turn things around if we act, you know. It is possible, but it's urgent. So there's an urgency there, I think. They can't stay in one landscape for too long.
I was thinking about that, actually, the way you present landscapes. And, of course, you know, we all have a sense of where we are as being a place that we belong, or perhaps sometimes we don't. There were definitely landscapes that I could relate to, and especially at the beginning, there's a really terrific scene where Jagger it's sort of a fun getaway scene where he's making his way out of the city, and I tried to imagine you know, the inner west that I knew, and all the little sort of dog bowled alleys and one ways as he escaped. But the really interesting juxtaposition that I found was in the early chapters, you present us with this very anxious Jagger, and he turns to his phone, or eventually perhaps finds that he can't turn to his phone to ground him. He looks to it as a way to ground him amidst these racing dramas of his life. And there's a later point, not terribly much later, where Nia is encouraging him to take off his shoes and ground himself to earth, getting that, really connecting with that sense of place. And I was really struck with the imagery of grounding and these two different modes. I think that people may, our listeners may have different senses of who is correct here in grounding themselves. But I wanted to ask you about this notion. Like, what does it mean for you to ground yourself, and how did you want that to play out in both Jagger and Nia's stories?
Yeah, well, I did see this incredible documentary about grounding, and it blew me away, because we are electromagnetic beings, and the planet is magnetic. And they've done all these scientific experiments, and something does happen when we touch the earth with our bare feet. And I think Nia at some point says, you know, we've almost lost that connection with the earth because we're always in shoes these days. So his shoes feature big time in the book, you may have noticed.
Yeah. I forget exactly what you call them, but they're sort of pointy toe shoes. Are they back in fashion? It felt like, is Jagger shopping at Tarakash and just the most tragic of suited gentlemen?
Yeah, they actually, well, businessmen wear them.
Not hanging really out pointy. With enough of them, obviously.
I know. And I didn't notice it either until I think I was at some really, it was like a Friday afternoon after work in the CBD area, and all these men in suits had these really pointy shoes. I was like, what the hell? What is this?
Oh, my goodness.
They call them spiffs, apparently.
There you go. Well, that, I mean,
yeah,
in that,
the people who wear those shoes are spiffs.
They
in the business scene.
It doesn't sound complimentary. And it is so good that we managed to. There's a really. Did you envisage Jagger's sartorial transformation as kind of being an inner journey as well? Because without giving too much away, Jagger definitely goes through some costumes.
Yeah, I didn't realize all of that was going to happen, but I had a lot of fun dressing him and playing with that humor. And yeah, and his business suit just gets more and more, which is like a symbolism of capitalism. It just gets more and more tattered as the story goes on.
And even beginning life in the novel as just being wholly unsuitable for anywhere other than that urban jungle, so to speak, that Jagger comes from.
Yeah, that was fun. The humour in the book was lots of fun to write.
Yeah. As they hit the road, you take Jagger and Nia and you take the reader on a journey into a world of climate activist groups. And for many people, I would say these are far off individuals, you know, chained to trucks or living up trees. It's not a world that we often see except in news reports. How did you go about creating and then depicting, or researching and then depicting, this inner world of these groups?
Yeah, well, the protesting movement in Australia, it's not big, but it's strong. It's getting bigger. And there are full-time protesters living in their cars. They travel from, you know, Tasmanian forests up to Queensland. They're real people. It's interesting. I had a interviewer the other day said, oh, you know, once I realized I had to, like, use my imagination, then I really got into your book, like, as if it was a bit fantastical. And, yeah, I thought that was fascinating because everything in the book is actually based on fact and inspired by real life. There's nothing fantastical about it at all. Everything is totally possible and is happening or could very well happen in the next few years. So, yeah, I've also, some readers are like, oh, you know, all that hopeful stuff, did you make that up? I'm like, no, that's real. That's well-researched science. There are some really good things happening in this world.
I think it's tremendous to approach a book like this with, or I think, sorry, no, I might start again there. I think it's tremendous to approach any fiction with a sense of how it might fit in our real world. And it's, I like that you shared that, the idea that this conversation where someone thought you were just, you know, wholeheartedly making things up, but of course...
Yeah, they thought it was unbelievable. That's what they said. Mm. Oh, when I realized I just had to use my imagination, then I got into it. Like, it was an unbelievable scenario. It's like, ooh. Yeah.
There are elements of the novel that skew towards climate fiction and speculative fiction, moments that, whilst within the realms of possibility, might seem extreme to us sitting in the safety of our homes right now. How did you want to go about portraying those elements of our climate future? What was important to get right and to, I guess, show to the reader?
Well, again, it's all based on well-researched science, and the Gold Coast is the highest on the list for being vulnerable to climate impact. You can go onto I think it's an Australian government website, and there's a list of, you know, the most vulnerable places in Australia, and the Gold Coast is top of that list. So, if you're talking about the scene on the Gold Coast, the protesting action that occurs, that's all based on real fact. Those things have happened. From some of the, you know, stories I've heard from protesters. Park rangers do use drones to survey their parks. There are lots of people in Australia using alternative oil to run their cars. The property developer, Hitmen, strand of the book, you know, that was very much inspired by the Ron Medic Michael McGurk case. Mm. And Juanita Nielsen, I think she never got found, but it's somehow just common knowledge that her body's probably in the, you know, bottom of a building, buried in cement. So there's so many elements of the book that are very much, even though there's certain things in the book that haven't happened yet, they could happen tomorrow. So, yeah, I think it's very much set now rather than in a future time. Yeah.
It's incredible to look at those scenarios.
Which is scary, isn't it? It's a bit scary.
And it is incredible to look at those scenarios and to think about where we exist in them, to think about the idea of how we confront them in the abstract, and so how we might make changes to our lives looking to the future, but then also how we think about them in the short term. And, you know, again, you also nod, or I think at least Jagger describes it this way, to prepper culture and the ways people are thinking about going off grid. And I was really curious when I ask you about how you wanted to portray a climate future, do you have a sense that, you wanted these events to really jar people into considering some of these actions? Like, why, Can you simply be aware, or do you have to make choices about what happens next?
I didn't set out to say, you know, everyone wake up, we need to do something. I just, through the act of writing the book, I realized hope comes through action. That was my big breakthrough. And I realized that as a species, we've lost hope, because the dominant narrative is you know, it's too late. But the scientists aren't saying that. They're saying if we draw down emissions, the IPCC report, the last one, they said it will take 20 years for the Earth to recover, but it will recover. They're not saying it's too late at all. And we all have the power to do things in our own life. People keep saying to me, oh, there's nothing I can do, but I just think there's so much we can do. So I suppose Nia really represents that. And I think Jagger gets on board in the end. Oh, there's a spoiler. But that's, yeah.
And I mean, it feels like so much in the book depends on how we deal with that surface. We talked a little bit about Jagger and Nia's first meeting and appearances and whether we can look past them, whether we can delve a little deeper. It felt very thematic of the rewilding. I mean, we have Jagger who was seduced by the life that was represented by his dad. He and Nia, they assume so much about each other on their first meeting. Jagger makes some pretty racist assumptions at points in the novel about a character just on how he engages with them. Even in there, we were talking there a little bit about their ongoing arguments about how to interpret climate action has this kind of sense of a clash of appearances as much as it has hard science. Do we need, is there something in this book in this sense of rewilding that we need to engage a little bit beyond the surface? We need to take a deeper look at our world.
Yeah, absolutely. We're distracted by our lovely little devices and we've lost touch with nature. And the more we can get in touch with nature, the more as a species we're going to go, oh, there's something happening here. Gee, those trees look stressed. Why are the cicadas not singing this year? You know, the more we're in touch with nature, the more we see, well, there is something happening with the planet.
It felt like Jagger and Nia were on the same path in opposite directions. Nia had taken that deep look but really had lost sense of how to really functionally do something with it. And Jagger had an incredible amount of information, but it felt like he was just resting on the fact that he had that information, that you know, call it clicktivism or just call it that very absolutely superficial engagement with issues.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we often as humans we can go, oh yeah, I read this thing that says everything's going to be all right, it's, you know, or it's all the billionaire's fault, or so it's like we disassociate with it and say, well, there's nothing I can do. It's not my responsibility. Whereas, Nia has delved right into it and then she's gone, whoa, because she's looked at the science and she knows how dire things are and things are going to get a little bit bad. But it doesn't mean it's going to be forever. My personal opinion is that I think at the 23rd hour, we'll get our shit together. I think things will get a bit worse before we actually just go, whoa, because look what happened in the pandemic, how the world came together. Like the pandemic, strangely, gave me so much hope.
I'm hoping that it's through narratives as well as through exploring the very real day-to-day issues of this, that something good comes of it. But look, if it comes down to it and we have to start putting suits in caves where they can engage with eco-warriors, that could be a plan as well.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a famous psychologist, Per Espen Stoknes, and he says that the dominant narrative at the moment is one of doomerism, and that our stories that we tell are so important to us, you know, the health of us as a species, and we need to change that narrative. So in a way, the rewilding is my attempt to say, hey, we can do this, and there's power in numbers. And I do it on an individual level through two characters, but Yeah, I feel that, you know, I wrote this book for myself and I feel that as a human now I'm just like making change. I'm divesting. I've got a community group happening where on our little peninsula here we're aiming for net zero emissions. You know, I'm just making all these changes in my own life that gives me hope.
And I think if listeners are looking for a little bit of inspiration, we are discussing The Rewilding. It is the new novel from Donna M. Cameron. Donna, thank you so much for taking the time to join me and to chat about it today.
Oh, thank you for reading it, Andrew.
Thank you for joining me. Thank you also to Donna M. Cameron. She joined us today with her new novel, The Rewilding. It's out now. Final Draft records on the lands of the Darug and the Gunungurra people. The show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. You can stay in touch wherever you are joining us. Final Draft is on social media. Just look for at Final Draft 2SER. Or, you know what? Leave a comment. Drop us a like. Help other people discover new Australian writing through Final Draft. My name's Andrew Popel. I am going to be back with more incredible conversations from Australian authors. So stay tuned. Till then, happy reading. Bye for now.